Hello, and welcome to the Game Slave Podcast, episode 161. I'm Proteus.
I'm Assimilator.
And I'm Zelda Queen.
And we're just back from NDK.
It was a long but fun weekend with more chaotic events than we're used to.
Yeah, Colorado weather decided to do the crazy stuff this last weekend.
How about the whole week?
That's true.
Yeah, we had floods, then at the convention we had a fire alarm go off, and now you guys understand why the entire room thought that the strobing was an effect of the video and not the alarms going off, based on how that video was.
Yeah, yeah. It was a bit whoop-whoop.
And then there was also the tornado warning saying, keep everybody inside, but like 30 minutes before was keep everybody outside, the fire alarm's going off. Then you get the Denver fire marshal yelling at you over the,
move your car or it will be towed.
Because you are in the fire lane, parked illegally. Yeah.
The good news is that we did find out NDK attendants can orderly get themselves out of a building in the event of an emergency.
Which is very good. Everybody handled themselves really well, and the staff got everybody out. It was just kind of getting everybody back in that was kind of crazy, but the staff was doing a good job saying, clear, this is where pathways are going now, clear this way. I mean, they got people that are like, I'm making a line here now for the elevator. If you're for the elevator, go over here. I mean, that sort of stuff, which really helped.
Yeah, I mean, we even had Todd Haberkorn being, pulled in back through the hotel wall. Everyone else was trying to get in as well, and people were, they made, a path for him, which is kind of,
Yeah.
I guess when you got, big guy yelling, make a path, make it wide. People kind of go, what?
Yeah, it wasn't until him and Todd and whoever else was there, another staffer, went by. I was like, oh, it's a guest.
Yeah, I figure they're just,
Emergency
or,
Yeah.
Well, speaking of emergencies, unfortunately, one of the cosplay announcers for the costume contest, she had a seizure on stage. So they had to take her. So Kimberly was saying, it's like, yeah, they announced the rest of the winners really rapid fire and then immediately rushed her to the hospital. As of Sunday, she was in stable condition but was being monitored as it was her first seizure. We hope that she gets well.
Yeah, that's always scary. You always.
I think that worries the doctors too. When you have someone that's had a first seizure because they don't. If it's a pretty pre-known thing, it's like, oh, it was just this. They just didn't get their medication or too much sugar.
It's an existing condition. It's like, okay, this happened. We know this is why it happens. This is what you can do to prevent it. When it's the first time, it's like, okay, there was a lot of things going on. We don't know what could have caused this, so now we have to monitor for it.
Yeah, so I hope she makes a speedy recovery and gets to go home soon, and hopefully they can figure out what was happening, because that sort of thing is scary. I can only imagine what that's like.
But despite all that chaos, you wouldn't have really known anything bad happened at the convention, because they did a great job of keeping stuff moving as it should have.
Yeah. I mean, all things considered, I mean, I haven't been to a lot of other conventions, so I can't always speak for, a broad amount of experience, but every time I've gone to NDK, I'm always amazed how smoothly most things do go. Yes, sometimes a panel might be a little bit, a few minutes late, maybe a panelist is a couple minutes late. I mean, nothing's ever, chaotic. And everybody, at least for us, since we get to go behind the scenes a little bit more with press and stuff, everyone's always amazed how they're like, this is the well-run con. Guests always say that about NDK. They're like, it's well-run. The staff knows what they're doing. You're not just sort of shuffled along saying, what's going on, sort of thing. So I think, kudos to NDK and the staff for, always making everything run smoothly. I can't say that I've ever really had a terrible con experience.
No, I think so either. I mean, this year, we unfortunately didn't get a chance to interview Chris Patton. He was scheduled with us, but the note didn't end up on his schedule, and so he didn't know and was, out off site, I guess, I think, at the time that our interview was supposed to happen.
He was enjoying one of our few breaks in rain during the weekend.
Yeah, goodness knows he. Yeah.
But that's okay. Yeah. I mean,
And the only other weird thing I had was, Raj not showing up on time for his panel.
But he was in the other hotel, wasn't he, signing autographs?
I think so. I think there was just like a miscommunication. The staff didn't get him moved.
But he got there, and...
Yeah, he did. And he did a good panel in, like, you know, the 40 minutes or something that he ended up having, but, yeah.
Most of the panels this year, the ones that I got to seemed pretty good. At first, I didn't think there were a lot of voice actor panels, and then I looked back, and it's like, well, actually, I did end up in a lot of panels where they were talking. The ones that I made it to.
There just weren't as many, I think, of the Q&A, where they had, you know, like, you know, four voice actors and just kind of, you know, open... forum, basically. They had a lot more of the voice actors in a panel with some sort of purpose. So there was, like,
the Creating Voices with David Vincent.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there was also one that...
And there's Kara Edwards. She also did a kind of voice acting how-to as well.
Let's see. I know Todd Haberkorn just did a solo panel. There was Chris Patton Shares Too Much, which was pretty funny. Yeah.
We got the Red Wine Therapist podcast, which was Chris Patton, Leah Clark, Jan Scott Frazier, and I feel so bad that I cannot remember the therapist's name.
Was it Charlene?
I think it's Charlene or Chantel, something like that. I feel bad. I just feel bad that like my brain just can't remember right now. It was very interesting and informative. I suggest just look up the Red Wine Therapist on, I think, Podomatic.com.
Yeah.
And you can listen to what's on there. I'm amazed that I stayed awake for the thing. I mean, it started at midnight.
Yeah, and it went an hour and a half.
It was on the schedule for an hour, but it went an hour and a half.
I mean, at that point in time in the con, there's...
There's nobody up.
Yeah, and there's no panel after them. So it's like,
so they can take all the time that they want. I'm just amazed, you know, everybody seems to survive, especially the guests. At least this year, no guests got to go home because of sickness, especially altitude sickness. Everybody seemed to be doing really, really well. I think having the extra humidity probably helped a little bit because it wasn't too warm, but...
And it wasn't too dry. The redwinetherapist.podomatic.com.
Yep.
Which was said like 5 times during Chris Patton's thing because he got it wrong the first, like, 3 times, but Leigh Clark was sitting directly in the front row to keep correcting him. So then he's like, yeah, you can... And then he would reference it. He's like, and then he'd say the entire address and get it right the last couple of times. And let's see. Randy Milholland returned from Something Positive this year, and seeing how...
Clarine Harp.
Thank you. Clarine Harp was there again. They did another panel, which unfortunately I wasn't able to record because Clarine has to be careful about what she says in a public forum because of her job. Randy doesn't give a damn, but Clarine has to be very careful about her appearance. But it was interesting. It was a little different from last year's because there weren't as many random questions. Actually, there weren't very many questions at all, so Randy just kind of babbled a lot. And he talked about how in his early days he actually got linked by Penny Arcade. And then after that, he did the... if for anybody that reads the comic, they'll remember there is a one where he goes to Salem with one of the other cast members to try and root out fake Wiccans. Well, apparently that got... Most real-life Wiccans agreed with the panel. It's like, oh, yeah, the comic. Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. Well, of course, there's always a few which get mad at him. And this one started this massive flame war with one group. And Freeze is like, my entire group will come down on you. And he gave the name of the group. I don't remember it right off the top of my head. But he looked it up. It's like 15 people. So then the guy goes in order to fight Randy, spams like a bunch of people on Yahoo groups when they were the big thing. It's like he ended up spamming several thousand Wiccan groups. And it's like after this was all said and done, I got 15 actual hate mails. Half of those apologized when I told them what happened. And I ended up with more hits than I got from Penny Arcade. So he actually sent the guy a thank you letter saying thank you letter and offering him, you know, a free sketch or something if he sent him his address. He never did hear back from the guy.
I guess the effect was the opposite of what the other guy was expecting.
It's still hilarious.
It's just kind of sad, too. I mean, it's like... courteous, everyone. Please be courteous to each other online.
Well, he's always surprised. He's like, yeah, the very first comic he did was an abortion joke. And he said he did that one in order to weed out people that wouldn't find his kind of humor funny. He's like, I didn't get a single hate mail from that one. It's the ones I don't expect that I get hate mail from. Like, well, I think he actually kind of expected it, but when he did the comic about the Christian hell houses.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, every year on Halloween, he still gets a few hate mails on that one. But he's like, they're real, guys.
This is a real thing that exists. I'm kind of mocking it, but
he said when he
people
did,
do this.
Yeah, he said when he did the 9-11, when he was talking about the 9-11 house, he's like, yeah, I actually went into, he actually started seeing red while drawing that comic because of how mad it made him. But he's like, these are the actual instructions for that room. And it actually pissed him off to have to do that comic.
Well, I went to the Blu-ray DVD production panel that was hosted by Clarine Harp and Patrick Seitz, which was a very informative, like, behind the scenes, what does, you know, Funimation at least do when they get the rights to, you know, have an anime released in the United States? And I'm going to do a write-up on this because there's just a lot of information that I got from that panel. Unfortunately, I was not allowed to record it, but that's okay. It was just really good because Clarine talked about how they go through, like, translations and how they do the subtitles, how they send it off, send it to another department to start doing the, you know, English language adaptation, which Patrick Seitz talked about a bit, too, because he is involved in doing English scripts, basically, for, you know, various animes, and we talked about some of the other titles it picked up. I guess one thing, another thing too, we also had an interview with Justin Rojas, who is, I can't remember his exact title, but he's basically the social media guy for Funimation.
He's their public face.
Yeah, that's what he said. He's the public face. He goes around, does a lot of cons and such to, you know, talk about what Funimation does and such. And we learned a lot of really interesting things from him too. We did get to record since it was an interview, so look for that, but interesting. He was just a really fun guy to talk to. Most of these people are, like, in love with their job, even though sometimes it causes them a lot of stress and is hard. They still really, these people really do care about the anime they get and how they do it and how they release it and how people, you know, react to it and enjoy it. They say that they do like getting feedback. They want to make things easier so they can listen to people and see what they need to, you know, do to, you know, keep customers happy and buying the product and getting stuff brought over.
Yeah, in addition to Funimation, I think we did four other interviews or five other interviews.
Let's see, we had Funimation with Justin Rojas, Todd Habercorn, Leah Clark, Tia Ballard, and
then we had Tyler St. Jaffe twice.
Because he just happened to be in the room.
Well, we were supposed to be talking with Chris Patton, and I just ended up talking with Taliesin instead.
It works.
Taliesin was really interesting, so.
I agree with what you said earlier. He's very cerebral about a lot of stuff and likes to discuss the sort of behind the scenes of, you know, who, how, where, and why certain things work this way. Especially in anime and theater and that sort of such.
Yeah, and he is, like, I don't know how to put it exactly, like, very geeky. He has been going to cons since, I think he said, 1991.
He's gone to cons where he said the whole con fit in one room. Considering that the first IndieK I went to was at the Tivoli. Unfortunately, I did not know about, it was year four. But they had a place in Lakewood. It was just one floor of the hotel, and there was only a handful of rooms, maybe five, maybe six. There's dealer's room and the game room are the only two rooms I really remember because that's where I hung out the most because I only got to go one day. I didn't realize there were panels and signings and that sort of stuff, but I had fun. I mean, it was the first time I ever got to go. So yeah, I think just IndieK has grown exponentially from those early days.
Oh, they've, in just the time I've been going, and my first year was at the Holiday Inn, which is now the Crown Plaza off of I-70 and Chambers, they've grown a lot since then, because I remember when they first went to Marriott, I'm like, there's so much room, and now it's like, I can barely get through here.
Well, considering they sold out again on Saturday.
Yeah, I think they sold out Friday and Saturday again.
Did they sell out Friday, too? They didn't sell out Friday last year.
I thought they did. I might be wrong. I'll have to double-check that.
I know Sunday was a lot less, but Sunday's always less. I think it's because everyone parties really hard on Saturday, as we can tell by the people outside my door. I was like, guys, seriously, if you're going to party, just do it in the room. Don't be in the hallway.
It's the one reason I'm kind of glad that we don't really do atrium rooms. While it would be really cool to be able to hang the Game Slave banner off the atrium balcony for more advertisement, we never got any sleep in there.
I only remember the one time we got the atrium room, and that was one of the first years we went there at the Marriott. And nobody, like, super desired the atrium room. We just happened to get one.
They didn't know about the atrium rooms at that point. It's like, this is kind of nice. I can people watch from here. And then I remember one time going to sleep, though, with Spike playing the piano.
I forgot that was here that Spike and Jet hung out at the lift, hotel bar, like, the whole con.
It worked.
It was very character fitting.
It was kind of nice that the staff actually did let them play the piano, because I doubt they'd let most people, but I don't think they let people touch it now.
I don't know, it's still like out there. It's just was sitting there during the con. I don't know.
Well, when Piano Squall came a couple of years, I know they let him play randomly at the piano, but I think that he had permission to. And he was a musician. He knew how to treat the instrument nicely and with respect.
Yeah, maybe they have to actually go, it's like, hey, I actually know how to play this instrument. They don't want people just going on doing chopsticks and going down it with their finger.
Yeah.
Let's see. Other things that we did. I would like to say I went to the Media Blasters industry panel, but it wasn't really much of a panel, unfortunately. There was a scheduling conflict, and the guy showed up for the panel, but he didn't have a lot planned for it, and he had to get to DIA at the same time the panel was normally scheduled to finish. So literally, I walked in there, he was finishing answering a question. Anything else? Nobody raised their hand, so we got up and walked out. So the panel lasted like 7 minutes. I asked one of the other people that had been in there what the gist of what he said was, since I missed most of it. And it was that Media Blasters hadn't been doing a lot over the past few years because their main negotiator that would actually go and get them titles, his back had gone out, and he wasn't able to travel to Japan in order to do any negotiations. So his back is fine again now, so he's going to start doing more traveling, and they're going to start doing more, they're going to try and get in negotiations to do more stuff then. They don't expect to be doing a whole lot of real kid-friendly titles.
They are not very kid-friendly now. They kind of skew a lot older.
So we'll probably expect to see more fan-based stuff from them, putting it mildly. But yeah, so maybe we'll see more from the next year. I think it was the fact that this was their first industry panel ever. At least I think it was either ever or the first one since 2007. One of the two.
Yeah, I thought Media Blasters folded in the great, you know, anime collapse of the mid-2000s.
Well, I remembered seeing them in the dealer room last year.
See, I don't even remember seeing them in the room last year.
They were right next to the Glitch Gaming Gear.
Down at the far...
At the far end.
Far end.
Okay.
On the left. Well, in the middle left.
Yeah, I just... Some years, a lot of the booths become a blur. Especially, I sometimes blur them with the way the dealer's room used to be set up at the old Holiday Inn. Because I always remember buying my DVDs over in the corner. Well, the corner doesn't really exist the same way. It's always usually the J... pop and like accessories over there. I'm like, where am I? Like, oh, I'm remembering the old room.
Yeah, we always seem to buy some anime from Anime Depot, because they seem to have the largest selection of out of date anime that we can find.
They always have like just a lot of titles.
I don't know where they keep all that stuff.
Under the table, I think.
No, I mean like
non-cons.
Non-con time.
No, they're not just.
They have a physical store, right?
I don't know. They have an online website. I always forget that they are online. They're animedepot.com. And I'm like, I should check them more often for, you know,
or stuff. Where they're getting it, I guess, is the better question. Is if they just held stuff for years now or what?
Or maybe they just buy out people's, you know, like
maybe.
Other brick and mortar stores saying, we have all this old product. can we buy it from you? We can get it sold, because usually they can. I mean,
maybe they bought a ridiculous amount of product before the anime bust. Before we lost, you know, Jinion and Pioneer.
And ADV and Bandai. Well, good news about Bandai / Sunrise, at least talking with Funimation peoples, is that they've picked up a lot of titles that were in their catalog that basically they could renegotiate. And one of the ones that I know most people are very, very excited about is they got Cowboy Bebop.
Woo!
Which they aren't going to go through and redub it or anything, because to me, you know, a lot of people are like, that is the epitome of the, you know, best dub ever sort of thing.
It was done really well.
It was done really well, and it's the anime that I could show to people who don't like anime or don't know nothing about anime, and they're like, what is this really cool thing? I think it's because, you know, it's sort of pulpy, sort of space western, with older characters, which I think helps a lot, and just the dub was, you know, done really well. But they're going to say it's going to be released on Blu-ray. So it'll be interesting to see how clean everything and pretty everything will be.
Yeah. Maybe put a laptop next to your TV, one with the with your old DVDs in it, one with the Blu-ray. It's like, okay, so let's see how this looks next to each other.
Yeah. And it all depends, too, on the quality of the masters and such, whatever they can get a hold of.
That does remind me of the most amusing, product, this promotional product that I saw this weekend. The Corgi Bebop.
Oh, yes. Bag. There was a Corgi Bebop bag.
That's kind of cute, actually.
It was cute, and I was like, if it was bigger, maybe I would have bought it. I need a new bag so bad, just a new shoulder bag. But yeah, it's, talking of cleanups, one of my big purchases was we bought the Tenchi OVA. And the reason why I did it is many, many years ago when I was, you know, first getting anime, Tenchi was one of the ones I was like, ooh, I really want to buy it. But at the time, DVDs still were really expensive. I think it was like $120 at least for the DVD release at that time. And I was like, I just could never bring myself to buy it. And when I finally decided to, it was out of print. I could only buy it off of eBay, and everybody was charging an arm and a leg. So it's come around again, because Funimation got to pick up a whole bunch of titles since it was Pioneer, and Pioneer's no longer here, at least in the U.S., and so I was like, hooray. I didn't realize when I bought it that it actually has the whole OVA on DVD and also on Blu-ray together. So I was like, well, this is cool. So we started watching. I just like, I'll put in the Blu-ray. Holy cow. I cannot believe the quality of the picture.
Yeah, the colors are very vibrant. It's...
And that's why, what was it Care Bear called me to the Funimation guy? A Blu-ray Nazi?
Well, when we were talking to the phone, he was like, if I'm going to get it, I want it on Blu-ray. And I have similar things. I'm like, if I can get it on Blu-ray, I'm going to get it on Blu-ray. If I can't, and it's the only chance I'm going to get it on a digital media, like DVD or something, I'm going to buy it. Just so I can have it. Because I don't know when it's going to come back. And everything's so crazy here with how they have to license things. It's very... I don't think we realize how much negotiation and stuff is involved in these sort of things. Because, like, right now, with a lot of streaming stuff, they just have to license the streaming. And, in fact, the Funimation guy, Justin, was telling us, he goes, some stuff, he goes, we're licensing before it's even created. You know, it's starting to get to the point where you're kind of taking chances now on titles.
So they're basically talking to the Japanese studios and the you know, studios saying, we have this anime coming out, it's, you know, a high school comedy, whatever.
Yeah.
And Funimation says, okay, we can probably sell that.
Yeah, it just depends on what it is. Like, Attack on Titan right now is huge. You can view it on Funimation's website and also on Crunchyroll. And I think they negotiated before it even... They had at least a manga to go off of.
It probably helps now that since they're doing the simulcasts, they can, it's like, okay, we'll license it for this. We don't have to put... All we have to put initially is the money to dub it and then stream it. And then, based on how the dubbing and streaming goes...
Subtitling.
And then it's like, okay, depending on how that goes... Then we'll look into actually paying the prices that it'll cost to have the thing dubbed, printed, shipped, and marketed.
But they have to renegotiate the rights. This is a thing. When they sometimes get the rights for streaming, they get it just for streaming. And then if it... Because then if it does well, they can go back and renegotiate, saying, hey, we think it's going to be good in the American audience, you know, American market, so can we have the video rights? Because I was learning, too, that sometimes what you see on the broadcast is sometimes different on what you get on the disc. Mostly because sometimes they will upgrade the animation in certain sequences, or they will change scenes or re-edit stuff. Sometimes it's very minor, but they say other times they said that there was one particular title that just drew from crazy because it's almost like the whole story changed.
I guess, long story short, I had a heck of a lot of fun this week, and despite being extremely, extremely busy.
Busy and just tired. I slept better than I normally do, which is surprising. I don't know if it was staying up that first, like that Friday night, so late. But I was like, okay, we could do this. And we gotta go to the Pancake House again. I know it's a silly thing, but I really like that Pancake House.
It's funny that we only do it once a year when we could just drive down there, too.
It's a treat. It's one of those things, I think, sometimes that, at least here with the mass marketing and box stores everywhere and the same chains all over the place, we've got those couple things that are really unique. I'm like... I will purposely go there or purposely enjoy it because it is the only thing there. I like mom and pop's places or privately owned businesses in that sort of regard.
There was also that little sushi joint that's actually in the same area as the Pancake House that was actually pretty decent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had good stuff.
Yeah.
Yay, tempura. That's my favorite.
Can anybody remember what the name of that place was?
Bara.
Okay.
Bara Sushi and Thai. I always find it weird when we start crossing Thai food into stuff, but it was...
Thai food is very fashionable right now, basically.
It's good, though. Oh, I'm trying to think of other things.
Yeah, the AMV contest, well, I did not vote for any of the winners. I can see why they did win, with the exception of the comedy one.
I didn't go to the contest this year because I went to the Blu-ray DVD thing and I was going to go to the Funimation panel, and that's when the whole, oh look, the fire alarm's going off sort of thing happened. I just kind of catch the winners now. Most of the time it's just, I'm overwhelmed by watching stuff because usually they have sometimes they have the sound up a little too loud, and then halfway through the day you're just like, I don't really want to be in this dark room for 2 hours because I would fall asleep if it wasn't for the loud music.
Although I will say, few things are going to compete with last year's AMV when the entire crowd burst out singing Journey during that one AMV.
Yeah, I didn't get the sort of same camaraderie when we were watching the winners this year. I thought the winners were...
The room was half empty.
Yeah, I was surprised that people don't come back to see the winners, but...
Well, they got people that announced the winners and put them on their blogs.
I want to know who the winner of the Atrium contest was.
Carrie Bear said she couldn't remember, but they announced during the costume contest, and it's probably on their forum, so we can look it up there, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, cool. I hope it was the Plant vs. Zombies people, but that's just because it was really well done, I thought.
Yeah, they had the...
It looked like the video game screen.
Yeah, the Tumblr one was kind of clever and fairly well executed as well.
The Princess Mononoke Forest was pretty nice.
Yeah.
And actually, they also would sometimes light it up behind, and you could see like a shadow in the forest.
Well, they had the shadow of the basically the, you know, ruler of the forest. I can't remember exactly what it's called now.
Yeah. The only other ones I thought were interesting, there was the one where they're making a bleach gag of the, you know, the Menos Venti with the Starbucks stuff, which I mean, good idea. Not as well executed as I think it could have been.
I just didn't seem like a lot of people were participating this year.
Well, it didn't seem that there were a whole lot of participants, and a few of them, it didn't seem like they were really trying. It's like, yeah, we'll enter, and then they just put a smattering of stuff along their balconies.
Yeah, it just wasn't quite the same. Usually, the competition is, you know, fierce.
Yeah, usually there's a lot, that one's really good, that one's really good, that one's really good. I know one year, a friend of ours actually had put an actual TARDIS on their balcony. Well, not an actual TARDIS, but you know what I mean. It was a replica. It looked like the TARDIS did, and it was. And I mean,
well, it was made of wood, wasn't it?
Yeah, they have it sitting in their apartment now.
Yeah,
they actually had it at their wedding too. That was quite an interesting. That was kind of interesting.
Was that like the photo location?
It was one of them. Yes. It's actually the, I still think the top of that TARDIS is, like, because it's in all these trees and such. It's like my Facebook profile banner thingy that you can set up. Let's see.
There's a lot of good costumes this year. Even Thursday night, I was amazed how many people are already, you know, day zero, so to speak, in costume.
Well, I think eventually, I mean, if they stay at Hotel Con like they want to, because some people may complain, why don't they move to the convention center? It's because they like the better feeling of a hotel convention. Well, this year they have started to spreading out to the other convention, to the other hotels in the area, because there's like 3 hotels all within walking distance here, yeah, depending on your definition of walking distance.
Yeah. I mean, all they moved was signs.
But that probably helped a lot because it opened up other rooms for stuff.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if they want to do more and more, eventually they're going to have to start having panels in that other hotel, and then they might have to move on to the hotel. And that was the Hilton they moved it to, which is literally across the street. And then about another block from the Hilton is the Hyatt, where we actually stayed 1 year. And that's a nice hotel.
Yeah. And the Hyatt's been partnering a lot more with IndyCade and such, especially after the Marriott sells out. I always find it weird when there's normal people still in the hotel, because sometimes, you know, some people kind of can get science fiction conventions and such, but I think sometimes anime conventions sort of throw them off skew, and they're like, what are all these people doing here? Why do they all have their game systems out? Why are they in costume of stuff that I don't know?
Well, yeah, I think that's part of this. So, to a degree, most Americans know Star Trek, at least. You know, they know what a Klingon looks like.
Star Trek, Star Wars, you see somebody...
But then you see a guy walking around with a sword that's twice as tall as he is, and he's like...
With you know, blonde spiky hair and stuff, you're like...
And people just go, what is that about?
I'm trying to think of what my favorite costume was that I saw, but I guess the cutest was the Howl's Moving Castle family. I mean, they had their, like, infant, less than a year old, dressed up as Calcifer.
And they had their 3-year toddler-ish,
as Markle, and then the wife was Sophie, and the husband was Hal. And that was, they were adorable.
Apparently, there was a really cute Eevee at the comic contest, which, in the intermission, apparently she was actually saying hi to people in the front row, so Care Bear got some right up-close pictures of that costume. It's like her and our other friend Lynette, who was also in the costume contest, said, it's like, yeah, we were just playing with the Eevee during the intermission. let's see.
What did I see that I thought was really
There was a really good Asari. I'm not sure if it was a Justicar or just a battle or just a Asari commando. But she was also at Denver Comic Con, but, you know, blue face paint.
She
had a relatively tight suit, but she, you know, had the gun, and then she had a wiring in her glove so she could make it glow blue to make it look like she was about to use biotics. So I just thought, you know, the attention to detail in that costume was on it. It was awesome. She was complaining, though, that she needs to build cooling into that costume for future conventions.
Yeah, I saw some people who, especially, like, one person who's dressed up as a Charizard, did not look very happy once took his, you know, headpiece off. And
I was toasty enough just doing the Ninth Doctor, just because I had, you know, a sweater and a jacket on.
Well, it wasn't a sweater. It's just a long-sleeve shirt. Heavier long-sleeve shirt.
It's a heavy shirt.
Yeah. But these people got who you were.
At least a few people did.
I saw a lot of Sixth Doctors, actually, from what I expected. Was it Sixth?
Fourth.
No, Fourth.
Fourth is Scarf Doctor.
Yeah, I saw a lot of Fourth Doctors. Sorry, Sixth Doctor is the Doctor that nobody liked. Or not very many people liked.
Yeah, Sixth was a crazy one with, like, all the multicolored craziness.
Yeah, apparently
Seventh was Sylvester McCoy with the question mark umbrella.
Yeah, apparently I was reading something on why, somebody's opinion on why that Doctor didn't work very well. One, he's the only Doctor that hasn't gotten to choose his own outfit. That was actually chosen by whoever. And he was actually supposed to go through a stage where he didn't become so crazy. And actually start developing into more of a person. But he never really got that chance. And because because BBC pissed him off, he's the only Doctor that didn't return for his death scene.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, they just had a... When they did the regeneration, it was just like Sylvester McCoy in, like, crazy makeup, trying to look like him in his clothes in the regeneration.
Yeah, it didn't work well.
Whee! But lots of Doctors, lots of Homestucks. lots more Star Wars, like weird Star Wars crossover things. I did see one little girl though. I think I can't remember. She had a Boba Fett or some other sort of helmet, but it was all pink. She was pink and black. She had like a little pink tutu and everything. It was crazy. It was cute. It was just like, yeah, a lot of Star Wars. A lot more video game characters. I didn't see any Fire Emblem, though. I was hoping to see some people as Fire Emblem characters.
But well, there's your goal for next year now. You could try and get together one of the Fire Emblem characters.
There are a lot of characters, and their costumes are very intricate. But what makes their costumes cool is they actually look like they work as clothing and armor. They're not just a hodgepodge of how does that work again?
Well, we're at about 40 minutes, so we should probably call this a podcast for now, because Lord knows we're going to still be talking about NDK next time I record, because it'll be the thing that's still primarily on our mind, because after we've done our writing, edit, and editing for Aerodol.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a lot of audio to work through.
And I've got a lot of pictures to go through, crop, adjust levels, and then post. It doesn't sound as much, but when you're going through hundreds to thousands of pictures, it gets a lot. So everyone can find us on thegameslave.com, facebook.com/thegameslave, or via Twitter @thegameslave. Or if you search for us on Google Plus, we're there too under The Game Slave. In the meantime, you all have a great week, and we will see you soon with our interviews.
Yep, our NDK spoils.
Game on.
Game on.
Game on. Game on.